Welcome to Island Issues, our weekly public affairs program about Hawaii Island's people, issues, and concerns. Brought to you by Regency at Hualalai, a retirement and assisted living community. Listen Sundays at 6:30 a.m. on KKOA 107.7 FM or at 8 a.m. on Lava 105.3 FM. Or to the podcast at lava1053.com or at koacountry1077.com. Now here's your host and producer, Sherry Brackett.
Aloha, good Sunday morning. Welcome to Island Issues. Today we are going to air part two of our discussion with Dr. Jay Sakashita, a professor of religion at UH Manoa and Leeward Community College. Dr. Sakashita was here on the island to do a talk at Kona Hongwanji about Buddha Day, and we got him into the studio. We aired part one of our conversation on April 1st, no fooling, and you may hear that as a podcast, as you just heard, at lava1053.com or at koacountry1077.com. Today we're going to air the balance of the conversation, picking up where we left off when I asked Dr. Sakashita how we are supposed to deal with things like mass shootings, and he was in the studio not that long after the Parkland school shooting, so that's where we pick up today with Dr. Sakashita's answer to my question about how we're supposed to deal with such tragedies and how religion might help us.
This question pops up a lot in the class, and so what I tell the students is that these questions are questions, again, that match our context. These are not questions that a lot of people asked in the past. And so in the study of religion, in general, a lot of people think religions give us or provide salvation from suffering. But there's something else that goes on, and that is religion provides salvation through suffering. So we are saved through suffering. And so sometimes you'll hear this, that, or there'll be a lot of examples where a person who has lost a child in a shooting has now become very active in promoting peace. So that through the suffering, something good can come out of it. For those who are very religious, if they're a Christian, they know that Jesus himself asked the Father. He knows he's going to be crucified, and he says, "If there's another way, let this cup pass, but your will be done." So the message, again, is that through the suffering, there is salvation. In Buddhism, the teaching is we can't always control what happens to us, but you do have some control on how you respond to what happens to us. And I think this is where religion comes in. It gives you some of the tools, how to handle, how to respond when suffering occurs. So within suffering, there is still the possibility of something good coming out. And I mentioned Buddhism. One of the symbols in Buddhism is the lotus. And the lotus grows in mud and muck, stagnant water. But from the mud and the muck and the stench, something beautiful emerges. And so sometimes life can be like the lotus pond. Mud, muck, stagnant water. But within each of us, yes, we have greed. Yes, we have hatred. We may be prejudiced. But within each of us, there's also the potential. So something beautiful. And sometimes it's the suffering that brings that forth.
In the case of these mass shootings, it would be nice to think that were true, but it's really hard to see. It's hard to see the good. When we see these things like mass shootings, we have hope that perhaps there's a way that either through legislation or something else that somehow things will change. Mm-hmm. And sadly, in our country, we just have this ongoing situation. And these situations don't occur elsewhere, not like this.
Well, we're still in this process of changing, I think. So we haven't seen the end product yet. I think of Japan. Japan's the only country to experience the atomic bomb, not just once, but twice. And the bombs were dropped on two cities, Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Nagasaki was a Christian city. It was the most Christian city in Japan. And the bomb actually fell on a church. And so the people of Nagasaki, the way they've understood it, is that they are going to be the means for world peace. And so Japan, especially people in Nagasaki, very active in world peace. In Hiroshima, there is the Peace Museum. And so again, they took this tragedy and transformed it into something powerful, peaceful. So the students in Florida, it's very encouraging. You see them banding together and demanding change. So hopefully something good will come out of it. I don't think that we're finished yet. I think it's an ongoing struggle. But I think I hope something good will come.
Well, some good things have already come. And I have to tell you, with those students from Parkland, I have been so impressed by their maturity. I mean, I don't think I would ever have been where they are in maturity. Well, I'm hoping I'm there now. But boy, when I was 17 or 16, right. I definitely was not that person. And, you know, I don't know if they've been suddenly forced to grow up really fast. But wow, they have been magnificent in expressing what they needed to express.
It's sad that tragedy was the stimulus for that. But they could have taken another route. They could have become just so discouraged and become maybe violent themselves. So it is very heartwarming that they took a tragedy and they're trying to use it as a means to better their world, to better our world.
As you were talking about that, I was thinking, you know, religion can also be an impetus for positive change. I look back at the civil rights movement, and although people on both sides, the Ku Klux Klan people used religion as their hammer. People who were involved with the civil rights movement really did have positive, and I'll use the term Christian values. No matter what religion they were, they had good positive values. And they all tried to use, you know, what they were doing as a way to move forward. And clearly in the civil rights movement, at the time we move forward, we may have a few setbacks now, but religion has helped with that, or at least spirituality.
In the Quran, it says that God's people will always arrive at the truth, that there will be struggles, but the good in the end is going to win out. So it is encouraged to have different points of view, and you debate, and you go back and forth. And in the end, what is right will emerge victorious, according to the Quran.
Well, you know, you talk about God. There are people who are scientists who say there is no way to prove the existence of God, therefore there is no God.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts about that? I mean, you're a man of religion. I am guessing you believe. Maybe, do you believe in God? I don't know.
Well, it depends on the definition of God, and it depends on the season. In December, I become more religious because I want the presents.
You want that Christmas tree and the presents.
In the summer, I become more Buddhist because I like the bone dances. But the idea of God as being this power that looks over everyone and guides everyone, it's hard to argue. Or at least it's hard to argue for the existence of a God who is all good and all powerful when you have tragedy. I understand the argument atheists and agnostics make, and I agree with their reasoning, but I still think religion is important. Again, it's like music. You may not like certain kinds of music. You may not think Taylor Swift is the best, but I think most people agree that music is important. It allows us to express ourselves. It connects people. It makes life beautiful. And I think religion does the same thing. So I don't think we ought to get caught up in, well, you know, it really is there a God? What's the function of the God? What's the function of the religion? When you've lost someone, religion is pretty good at helping you deal with that loss. When something wonderful, beautiful happens to you, again, religion is also pretty good with helping you celebrate. If you didn't have religion, you could still celebrate. You would still suffer. But I think religion is a very effective and very powerful means to express this. So I think it's like music, like the arts. There are people who are not musical, people who are not artistic, but I think even they can understand or appreciate art, music. So you don't have to be religious, I think, to appreciate religion. In fact, I'm talking about music and arts. Throughout history, some of the most incredible works of art, music, tied to religion. So, you know, religion has religion still has a very important role to play in society.
Well, it feels like part of what people get out of religion is the community aspect, coming together with others who may or may not actually share your beliefs, but just a positive groundswell of community feeling.
Traditionally, that's been the case, but now there's actually a movement away from the community. Individual practices, individual search for spirituality. People go on retreats, and sometimes on their own by themselves, or just online or through the books of some spiritual leader and practice on their own. But traditionally, the communal aspect has been very powerful.
Well, when you talk about people going off on a retreat by themselves, what you're talking about sounds to me a little bit like personal examination, personal insight, just a way to be in more deep thought about oneself and not so outwardly focused. And is that not part of Buddhism also?
You can find that in every religious tradition. So religion, in a way, is like your iPhone.
You mean I can't work religion either? Just like I can't work my iPhone?
You can just spend your whole time just on it. You can spend your whole time just on religion and, you know, not interacting with anybody, but just being inward focused. And so I tell students, you brought up Buddhism, and it is more prominent perhaps in Buddhism, that if you can control your mind, you can control your body. If you can control your mind and body, you can control yourself. If you can control your mind, body, and self, you can control the world that you live in. And so if your world is falling apart, chances are because you don't have control over the mind. You don't have control over yourself. And religion helps you to deal with that. Buddhism in particular, but you can also find that this inward tradition in every religion, helping you to understand not just the world around you, but the world inside. And if the world inside is good, you can deal with the world outside better, no matter how tragic or terrible it may seem, if you've cultivated something within. And I think you can find that in every religious tradition. But Buddhism recently, well, past decade or so, has become the religion most known for that. But this mindfulness idea you can find in every tradition.
I have friends who, for example, call themselves Jewish Buddhists.
Right, right. We have a friend who called, Jubu. That's what she says. I'm a Jubu.
And just for the mindfulness part and just for a different way to look at things.
Right. And so sometimes you hear things like Buddhism really isn't a religion, that it's more a philosophy. No, it's a religion filled with gods and whatnot. But again, you can take something and reinterpret it however you want to. And you brought up the example of the Ku Klux Klan. They've taken a religious tradition and reinterpreted it however they wanted to and distorted it. But everyone does that to some extent with their tradition. And so I tell students, really, it's up to you how you approach the different religions. And the goal in our class is to give you tools so that you appreciate, so that you can see how the different religions enrich our lives, that the different religious traditions are not trying to tempt you or cause you to fall away from the truth. They're a way, a different tool to help you to eat, if you like. You know, there's a fork, there's a spoon, there's chopsticks. Sometimes you need a knife to cut, but they all can be useful. And so it depends on how you interpret things. And that's why the context is important, because if you don't understand things in context, you rip it out, change the meaning, distort the religion, and suddenly becomes a religion of violence or hate.
You mentioned gods, and one interesting thing to me about religion is that, for example, in Catholicism, the religion in which I was raised, you have one God, but you also have the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. And there's other religions where you have multiple gods, and Judaism has sort of a different take on God than does Christianity. So just talk about the God concept or the gods concept, since some have many.
Well, Jews, Christians, and Muslims worship the same God.
Okay.
They worship the exact same God. They address God with different titles because, you know, different languages, but it's the same God. Having said that, they have different interpretations of the same God. So I have two sisters. The three of us, we each have a different understanding of my dad, my mom. So my sisters, they don't realize that I am the favorite child.
But they'll know that when they listen to this.
No matter how many times I tell them, they think that they are each other's the favorite. I said, no, you're not. And so in a way, it's like that. And so if you were to ask who has the best understanding of my parents, you'd have to step back and look at the three of us and how we understand, how we explain things. It's the same thing with Judaism, Christianity, Islam. They have the same God, but they approach God a little differently because they're coming from different contexts. They're coming to God at a different time. So I'm firstborn. So I know my parents from when they were younger versus my younger sister who comes and knows my parents at a later stage. So that shapes their understanding. So Islam comes late versus Judaism. So the understanding is a little different. But all three worship the same God. Hinduism, it gets a little bit more complicated. In Hinduism, on the one hand, you have those who worship 33 million gods. Number one, So on the one hand, you have Hindus who worship 33 million gods.
Seriously, 33 million?
That's a tradition, yes, 33 million.
Wow.
Yeah, Japan has only 8 million.
Okay. So,
but on the other hand, there are Hindus who say that 33 million are just 33 million different expressions of the one truth. And so from that point of view, the God of Judaism, Christianity, Islam is the same. It's just expressed differently because truth or beauty is expressed in different ways to different people. Right? What is considered beautiful by one person may not be the same to another. And so instead of arguing what is beauty, you recognize that beauty exists. And so in the view of many Hindus, not all, there is just one reality. And in different religions, it's called Allah, or it's called, you know, Yahweh, or Shiva, or whatnot. But there are other Hindus that insist, no, there are 33 million separate gods.
And a brief interruption to remind you, this is Island Issues, and I'm your host and producer, Sherry Bracken. We're brought to you by Regency at Hualalai, a retirement and assisted living community in Kailua Kona. And Island Issues is on the radio every Sunday morning at 6:30 a.m. on Koa Country, 107.7 FM, and at 8 a.m. on Lava 105.3 FM. And then we post the interviews as podcasts at lava1053.com and at Koa Country 1077.com. Click on Island Issues and then on the Island Issues microphone. Today we are in the middle of part two of our conversation with Dr. Jay Sakashita, a professor of religion from UH Manoa and Leeward Community College. And now we're going to go back to our conversation with Dr. Jay Sakashita, more conversation about interpreting the Bible and other holy books, what he may have learned from his students, and more.
I first read the Bible in 1984. And how many years ago? Is that, 34 years? Is that right? 34 years ago? Oh, my goodness. My understanding of the Bible today is very different from in 1984. I wouldn't say it's better now. It's just different because things that were important to me back then are not the same things that are important to me today. So the Bible reads differently for me. So I can't say, I wouldn't be able to argue with myself and say, well, you know, your understanding in 84 is wrong. Because in 84, the Bible fit perfectly for me at that stage in my life. But now those parts no longer fit. And it's okay for me to get rid of those parts. But a lot of religious people have trouble with that because they think it's either all or nothing. And so if I'm a person who believes in the Bible, I have to accept everything. And that's probably the biggest challenge. Because then what do you do with passages that tell you, go and kill babies? And you have lots of passages in the Bible where God kills babies. What do you do with that? What do you do with the passages that, well, you have to kill somebody because this person was deformed, or you killed this person because that in the book of Ezra and Nehemiah, no mixed marriages. So that's another traditional marriage I argue against in my class. Is that the one you want, where mixed marriages are not allowed? And so in the book of Ezra, God says, if you have married a foreigner, divorce the person. What if you got kids? Get rid of the kids as well. So what do you do with those passages, right? So, you know, that's why the context is always important. And by the way, to be fair, why do you have those passages in Ezra and Nehemiah? Because this is at a time when the Jews, their homeland has been destroyed. Attempts have been made to wipe them out. And the way back then, and sadly it still even goes on today, the way you wipe out a people, one, you can try to kill them all. Two, you can also rape. And that still goes on today. Because when you rape, you produce half-breeds. You defile the traditions. You ruin the bloodlines. You produce kids who don't have identities or a strong sense of one. So my children are half Japanese, half Chinese. And so they don't have a strong sense. You know, are we Japanese? Are we Chinese? When do we celebrate the New Year?
How old am I really?
Yeah. Which mustard do we use, the yellow one or the green one? You know, wasabi. But for certain people in certain places, it was an attempt to eliminate the whole group. And so for Jews, they've had periods where there have been an attempt to wipe them out, to annihilate them. And so now you have passages that says it's important for us to preserve our tradition. And if you marry with a foreigner, there's going to be a chance that you're going to lose a tradition. So that's why you have that. It's really an attempt to preserve your identity. Because at that time, they were facing an attempt to wipe them out. And so it makes sense it's that time. But if you don't understand the context and you bring it to 2018, you see, if God wanted us to have mixed marriages, he wouldn't have created different races. you know, because you don't understand what the context. And they'll quote you, Ezra, no marrying foreigners, because you don't understand the context, that's why. And then, again, you distort it. Now you can use the scripture as a weapon, whereas it's supposed to be a source of inspiration.
So now we know that Christianity and Islam, Judaism, have essentially one God. Hmm. Hindus have 33 million gods. What about Buddhism?
It depends on what kind of Buddhist you are. There's a branch of Buddhism. There are two big branches. One is Theravada. And Theravada Buddhism is the kind of Buddhism you find in Sri Lanka, Thailand, Burma, Laos. And the other major branch is Mahayana, the kind you find in China, Korea, Japan, Tibet. In Theravada Buddhism, the kind of Buddhism that's in Laos and Thailand and Sri Lanka, they believe in just one Buddha per cosmic age. And the Buddha is not a god. The Buddha was a human, a special human who opened up the path to enlightenment. So in Theravada Buddhism, you don't pray to the Buddha for salvation or whatnot. But in Chinese, Japanese, Korean Buddhism, you have many Buddhas, and the Buddhas are seen as being gods. So you pray to them for salvation. You can chant for salvation. You can buy special amulets to help you get blessings and so forth. So it depends on what kind of Buddhist you are. That's true in any religion, by the way. In Christianity, most Christians believe Jesus is God, but you do have some groups that say no. He was a special person, but not someone to be worshipped. So there's varieties in every religion.
Is there anything particularly surprising that your students have either asked you or taught you in all your years of teaching religion?
Before we go over each religion, I will pass out. Well, in my big classes, I can't do it because it's too large. But in the smaller classes where I have like 35, before we cover each religion, so for example, Islam, I will hand out pieces of paper and I ask the students, write a question. Don't write your name, but ask a question, something you're curious about. You don't have to worry about being embarrassed or sounding silly because it's anonymous. And they write. And so when I read those questions, what surprises me, a lot of them, it comes from not being familiar with the tradition. And so all they can grab are stereotypes. And so I always see my number one objective in the class is to help students, I guess, make sense out of the nonsense so that it becomes something that they can understand and appreciate instead of just simply saying, oh, you know, that religious group, they drink urine, because that's what one student said. You know, because in Hinduism, the cow is sacred. All parts of the cow, the feces, the urine, is useful. And so, you know, they grab onto the sensationalist stuff. You know, why are Muslims, you know, you probably heard this so many times, violent and whatnot. And what surprises me is the stereotypes, how strong they are. In a way, it's good for me to know this, because after you've studied religion for a while, you don't realize anymore the stereotypes. I don't know if that makes much sense.
No, it does make sense. Yeah. You're more familiar with it.
You're more familiar with it. And so my wife is from Singapore. She's Chinese. And in Singapore, the majority of the population is 76% Chinese. And so she's just Chinese. But when she comes here, not everyone is Chinese. And then she hears sayings about Chinese people. What? We're not like that. Well, that's what people think. You know? And that's because she grew up in a place where, you know, everybody, you don't realize, you know, because you're so comfortable, familiar with the tradition. So it's like that. And so I see, again, I tell people religion is so important because through religion, you get access to the culture. And that people do incredible stuff. They hate, kill, love for religion. And so it's important to get an understanding of the different religious traditions so that they leave the class with a deeper appreciation or respect for different cultures, different religious traditions, people who live in a different way. And also, something else that just popped in my mind that surprises me. Most students think there's only one way of doing their religion. So they believe there's only one way to be a Christian. There's only one way to be Muslim. And so you get questions like, why do Muslims, when that's wrong already? It's like saying, why? Yeah, I mean, not all Japanese are the same. Not all Hawaiians are the same. Not all Filipinos are the same. So the moment you say, why do Filipinos, that's you're already inaccurate. You're already making a dangerous statement. And so a lot of students come in with the idea that there's only one form of each religion. There's only one Buddhism. There's only one Christianity. And so again, the classes help them to understand that, no, there's diversity. And the diversity is great. Same thing with the United States, you know. Diverse people, it just makes us stronger. It enriches our lives. So the attempt to limit ourselves, deny certain people validity, saying there's just one right way, I think that's dangerous. And especially so in religion, to think that there is just one right way, I have it, you don't, therefore I have to convert you or worse.
Well, I think that's pretty good for your students to be able to come out with a broader understanding. Mm-hmm. Living in Hawaii, we have very many cultures, ethnicities, traditions. Mm-hmm. And actually, here in Hawaii, I've been pleased to be exposed to more different religions than I think I ever was before when I lived in California, Buddhism especially. Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't grow up and live around where there were a lot of Buddhists. They just there just weren't. So yeah, it's a nice opportunity, and it's good if people can in a scholarly way get to understand what life is.
A lot of regarding Buddhism, a lot of students ask, why is the Buddha so fat?
Okay, what's the answer?
And so they're surprised to learn that actually the historical Buddha, Buddhism begins in India, and in India the historical Buddha was bone thin. It is said that if you touch his stomach, you could touch his spine. He was so emaciated. And that's because in India, well, so in India, the Buddha is skinny. But when Buddhism travels, when it goes to a different context, when it goes to China, the Buddha becomes fat. Why? Well, I think it's the cake noodle black bean sauce. Because you have a lot of that, you're going to gain weight. No, it's because of different context. In India, the idea is that this world is illusion. The values of this world are not real. So ultimately, as you progress, you realize that you should not cling to the values of this world. It's fleeting. It's impermanent. It's not lasting. You should seek what is true and lasting instead. And so in India, the holy people will fast. They'll give up symbols of attachment to the world, like clothes, hair. That's why their hair is shaved and whatnot. And because the values of this world are not real, so you don't cling. And so the skinny Buddha represents this, that I'm not attached. But in Chinese culture, in Chinese religions, it's okay to be successful in this world. And so when Buddhism comes to China, Buddhism becomes a religion to help you become successful in this world. And what's a symbol of being successful in this world? Well, you have a lot to eat. And what's a symbol of being prosperous? Well, you know, not only are you spiritually prosperous, but you're prosperous in this world. You have wealth. You have a lot to eat, so you are bigger. And so you become fat. So that's why the Buddha is fat. But actually, he was bone thin. So there's an example of when you take things out of context, you change the meaning.
Interesting.
And so Buddhism goes, and every religion does this. Every religion. I mean, most students in my class, when I say Jesus, they have an image of Jesus in their head. And I tell them that it is a fact that no one knows what the historical Jesus looked like. That's a fact. Therefore, any image of Jesus is not accurate. Therefore, when you pray and you have this image of Jesus, that's not Jesus. Because it can't be, because it's inaccurate. And so what they've done is they've made Jesus into someone that they can relate to. And that's why Jesus always supports their biases. I've never heard a religious say, you know what? My God doesn't support what I want. Every God supports their bias somehow.
Yay.
Because they reinterpret. And that makes sense. You reinterpret something so that it fits you.
Makes you happy. Yeah. Dr. J. Sakashita, how did a Hawaii boy end up getting his PhD in Scotland?
My goodness, that's a long one. But the short answer is I got my bachelor's and my master's from UH Manoa. And one of the top scholars in Japanese religions was from Scotland. And he was invited to come and teach at Manoa for a year. And I took a class with him. And I was just attracted to his way of looking at religion. and I decided to follow him. So I went back to Scotland, got accepted to the PhD program in Scotland. And it turned out great because that's where I met my wife. That's where we got married. My children are named after places in Scotland. We went to the University of Stirling in Scotland. So that's my son's name is Stirling. And my daughter's name is Skye, after an island where we first talked about getting married, my wife and I. So education, religion saved me. From religion, I got a wife and kids.
Very cool. Dr. J. Sakashita, what else should we discuss before we say aloha?
Well, in my classes, I have an assignment where I have students visit 5 different religious traditions. And I think that in Hawaii, we have such a great opportunity. Within a relatively small area, you've got Christians, you've got Buddhists, you've got the Jewish community, you've got Muslims, all within a relatively close proximity to each other. It's fantastic to, I think, get to know them, appreciate. Don't convert, you don't have to. But it's like, you know, you go to a food court. You got Chinese, Japanese, Korean. It's a great opportunity to try. Or like a buffet line. I think of Hawaii as like the religion buffet. You can just go down the list and, you know, sample. Not to convert, but to appreciate. I think if more people appreciate, respect different religious traditions, I think only good can come from that.
Very good. Thank you so much, Dr. J. Sakashita. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
This is fun. And thank you so much to our listeners. This is Island Issues. I'm your host and producer, Sherry Bracken. Until next Sunday morning, please, let's all spread aloha around Hawaii Island. And please, let's drive with aloha. Ahui ho.
Thank you for listening to Island Issues, brought to you by Regency at Hualalai, a retirement and assisted living community. We welcome your comments and suggestions. Email us at info@labo105.com. Join us again next week for another Island Issues, a service of Hawaii Islands Mahalo Multimedia.